If you use AI for help on a project for school or work, have you ever wondered where the chatbot gets the information it generates for you? A copyright infringement lawsuit filed against Anthropic AI argues the company stole textbooks and other academic work to train the large language models behind its chatbot, Claude. Anthropic agreed last year to pay $1.5 billion to settle the lawsuit. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the settlement and its implications are Rachel Geeman, co-lead counsel for plaintiffs in the Anthropic settlement, and Elizabeth Wardle, director of Miami University's Roger and Joyce Howe Center for Writing Excellence. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Elizabeth, how did you find out that three editions of a textbook that you co-authored were used to train Claude?
Well, I sort of had my suspicions, but I did not know for sure until I received a big packet in the mail from Rachel's law firm explaining that this lawsuit had been settled. And that was the first time I really had specific information about it.
And Elizabeth, how much time did you spend writing that book and doing research to write that book? That's not something that people can do quickly.
Oh, gosh. Well, that particular textbook has five editions. And before we wrote the first one, we spent years planning it and trying to convince a publisher that it was a great idea because it was a really new approach to teaching writing. So it's been decades of my life spent on that particular textbook, which is only one of the books that has been used to train, that I've written that has been used to train AI. Hmm.
Rachel, explain briefly the legal argument in this copyright infringement case. Was the lawsuit basically arguing Anthropic AI kind of stole these works to train Claude?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. So the lawsuits, not just the Anthropic suit, but a lot of lawsuits that writers and artists and others have brought focus on a couple of things. One issue is how do these AI companies get the massive amounts of data that they use? And what we've learned is that while the industry is somewhat quiet about the sources of its data, that there's a whole bunch of shadow libraries out there with pirated books. And those pirated libraries are a problem for writers and publishers in and of themselves. And they're sort of supercharged as a problem when they're combined with AI companies to get books that way. Another big issue in these cases, and this was also an issue in Anthropic, is, well, okay, once you have the books, what do you do with them? And do you get people's permission? Do you pay them? Well, what's happened was the AI companies generally have, or certain AI companies have trained their large language models on massive numbers of books without seeking consent from writers and without paying them. So what we've alleged, as you say, is that by essentially taking pirated books, sort of Napster style, and also by using books without permission in this way and without compensation, that this violates the copyright laws, which give writers and publishers certain exclusive rights in their very hard worked and hard-earned intellectual property.
Rachel, how does the idea of fair use come into play and apply to these generative AI systems?
Yeah, so what the industry says is, you know, yes, we took a lot of books and yes, we trained on them, but gee, this is fair use, they say. They say that the books are essentially transformed, and you know what, there's not really a market harm anyway. We say otherwise. So fair use is an important but limited doctrine that ensures that there isn't whereas copyright creators have protection, certain things are fair game, like parodies. The issue here, from our view, is that this is stretching fair use way beyond any concept of fairness, and in fact is incredibly unfair. That there's nothing fair about stealing books from pirated websites, that there's nothing fair about using books without permission, and training on them precisely for the expressive value that they provide, that this isn't transformative, that this is exploitative. Now, I don't want to be overly simplistic because this issue of fair use is hotly contested. In the Anthropic case, Anthropic said that training on books was fair use, and they also said that the book acquisition was fair use. The court agreed with Anthropic about training, and we may not disagree with that ruling, but it exists. The court agreed with us about book theft, however, that that's just a bridge too far. It's not fair to steal books. So this issue of fair use is still ongoing and will continue to be litigated in the courts with respect to issues of book training.
We're talking about a first-of-its-kind settlement between authors and publishers and an artificial intelligence company. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Elizabeth, Rachel was just talking about this argument that by using these works to train AI, the work was transformed, that there was no market damage. What do you think of those assertions? Well, as an author yourself, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I was actually really surprised that the court, at least this district judge, disagreed with the claim that, or basically said that their use of our work was fair, that the only thing that was unfair was that if they used our work from these pirated databases. What the judge seems to believe is that the output of the AI is not direct quoting from our work, and thus it's been transformed. So I obviously think that that's not really correct. And so in getting ready for this interview, I had a little conversation with ChatGPT and asked it, you know, like, hey, what does Elizabeth Wardle think about X? How would you explain this like her? It was like you were talking to me. It was basically very, very close to things that I have written. I don't see how it's transformed at all. And then I had this sort of longer set of questions that I was putting to ChatGPT, and it was making a line of argument about why this was okay. And I said, okay, well, what sources are you drawing on to give me this answer? And it said, well, I can't tell you because I don't know. I mean, that's not how I'm trained. So I think that we have a real problem in that there is so much of our work that is being used to train these AI systems, and you can easily prompt the AI systems to give you information that sounds almost exactly like what many of us have written. And we are not only not compensated monetarily, which I honestly think academics are used to, but we're not compensated in terms of citation, which I think is a real problem for a variety of reasons, which I'd be happy to talk about. But I'm really concerned that that particular judge thought that their use of our work, as long as it didn't come from a pirated database, was fine and fair use, because these companies are, you know, billion-dollar companies who could not make their product without our intellectual property. And they're not only not compensating us, they're not even getting our permission to do this training.
Rachel, so do I understand the judge's, ruling? He seems to be saying that AI companies have the legal right to train these large language models on copyrighted works as long as these works are obtained legally. Is that kind of where the judge came down on that?
So first of all, I just want to absolutely co-sign what Elizabeth, you said, and I cannot tell you how many writers I've spoken with, and I'm almost in my gut now having an empathetic feeling of that horribly disconcerting feeling of seeing your words filtered through and your ideas and your sort of soul filtered through this machine that is sort of without attribution and that is very uncanny valley. So I just want to say that, I really hear you. Yes, Lucy, 100%. The judge in the Anthropic case essentially bifurcated the world, and under his application of the law, certain things were fair, certain things were not. It is certainly true that the battle is far from over. There are a number of very courageous plaintiffs, writers, who are actively litigating this question, this precise question of whether training is fair use. And I have to say, speaking for clients, that there is just a lot of good evidence that the material is not transformed, that the outputs, notwithstanding certain guardrails to prevent perhaps extensive regurgitation, are really the expressive content of the writers that went into it, that there is a market harm in very sort of crass commercial terms, as well as, of course, the emotional and blatant unfairness sense that goes around there. So yes, there is at least one, there is at least ruling that way, but this issue is being actively litigated, and new evidence comes in every day as we sort of have these models as part of our lives, as and an important part of our economy, right, for better or for worse. So this is absolutely an issue that everyone is focused on and that no one is going to let go of.
Rachel, do you think this could be a test case for other legal challenges?
Sort of the prosaic, boring lawyer answer is that a settlement is not itself precedential. In other words, it's not, Anthropic didn't acknowledge that it had done wrong. We didn't acknowledge that anything is remotely fair use. It's not a going forward license. However, I do think that the settlement is very important in a couple of respects. It absolutely shows the sort of manageability of authors and publishers and the industry coming together to vindicate their rights. Not all of their rights, for the reasons Elizabeth says, but working together to share recoveries in books that Anthropic had taken from these shadow libraries. So to the extent other AI companies might make arguments in court saying, oh gosh, this is just too complicated, we can't think of a way to get everybody together to pay them, we can say, well, respectfully, that is belied by what is happening before our very eyes. The sort of prosaic answer to the question about the impact of the rulings before settlement is that certainly other judges can look at the rulings, but it was there are rulings by district courts that nothing has yet percolated up to the courts of appeals on these precise questions.
Okay. Well, we will continue this conversation after a short break, and later in the program, a new documentary on what it takes to get the raw, relatable honky-tonk sound. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about a first-of-its-kind $1.5 billion settlement between authors and publishers and an AI company. My guests are Rachel Geeman, co-lead counsel for plaintiffs in the BARTS versus Anthropic settlement, and Elizabeth Wardle, director of Miami University's Roger and Joyce Howe Center for Writing Excellence. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Elizabeth, I just mentioned this was a $1.5 billion settlement. I'm going to ask a very rude question. How much of that do you expect to see?
Oh, well, probably little, if any, of it, because, and Rachel can explain this better than I can, but there seem to be two categories, and mine is an educational book. And so there's a split between me and my publisher, depending on my contract with the publisher, and I have a co-author. So if I saw $1,000, maybe three times because they stole three editions of this book, I would be surprised.
Well, and before we get into kind of how all that math works, Elizabeth, I know willful copyright infringement can lead to statutory damages of up to $150,000 per work. Some authors are opting out of this settlement, arguing they should be paid more. Did you consider that?
I didn't. I guess I don't know. I mean, maybe because I'm an academic and we're used to not really being very well compensated for our work, it didn't really cross my mind. But I was interested to read about the authors who had opted out and their reasoning for it. And I'm really glad that they are, you know, pushing this question forward, because it's pretty obvious that even though this is a really enormous settlement, there are a lot of people to pay. And there's simply no way in this settlement for us to be compensated the amount that we would be compensated for market value of the work.
Rachel, is there anything you want to add about kind of how that works in terms of, you know, payouts in a settlement like this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I do think not for nothing the judge called the settlement a home run. And there's, you know, I think it's really important for folks to understand that while the settlement is so important, it is the largest copyright settlement in U.S. history. It may not send a precedential legal signal, but it sure sends a relevant industry signal. Anthropic as part of the settlement, is deleting the pirated copies of the books and certified it did not train the commercial models on them. Now, as to this question of and you know, I should say too that there's, as you know, there's certain claims that folks who accept money in the settlement are indeed giving up in exchange for that money, but there are a lot of claims that folks are keeping even if or when they take the money. Claims related to output are not released, and essentially the settlement, the world essentially stops on August 25th, 2025, meaning, you know, should something happen tomorrow that Anthropic did, I'm not saying it would or has, but somebody could preserve their rights for that. So I absolutely am in favor of every single class member weighing and assessing their options as to, you know, whether to claim in the case, whether to stay in. And another option, of course, is to opt out. It is certainly true that there is a statute that provides that statutory damages can go up to $150,000. I will say that is a very tough road. And, you know, we're all sort of empirical people as much as we're also optimists and fighters. And if you look at the data on copyright recoveries, ours is, especially when more than one work is involved, our settlement is, notwithstanding that it's, you know, a class action and shared over hundreds of thousands of people, that the per work recovery is very comfortably in the range of what folks often get in court. So we are, you know, without in any way trying to chill somebody's right to do whatever they wish, with a lot of experience and humility, but also a lot of pride, we are very proud of the sort of per work recovery that this settlement can give to people.
Yeah, sure. And I certainly did not mean to insult your work in that in any way.
Not at all. These are great, honest questions that absolutely people should ask themselves 100%.
Yeah. Well, Rachel, I know some publishers are responding to pirated material by making deals with AI companies. What do you think of that approach?
Well, it's certainly interesting. I mean, look, from our perspective, this sort of shows why writers should be paid, because there is a massive market for, quote, data. There is an existing licensing market. There is a growing licensing market. And one way to look at all these agreements is to show that it belies this argument that some on the other, you know, that some on the in the AI industry have raised, that, you know, it's just too hard to license work. It's too hard to find everybody. And, you know, I hear those arguments and I'm thinking, boy, these are really, really, really smart people who can do a lot of things. Can they figure out how to pay writers in licenses, just as it has been figured out or starting to be figured out how to pay some other rights holders for licenses? The answer is yes.
Yeah. Elizabeth, I want to get your thoughts on that point, this idea of, you know, deals that publishing companies are making with AI. But I also want to get your thoughts on whether you think AI's use of work in this way could discourage this kind of writing, discourage academic writing, all the years that people spend on books like yours.
Sure. Yeah. So two questions. I think we're between a rock and a hard place, really, because I write different kinds of books. So I have a new sort of popular book with Wiley called Writing Rediscovered. I've written textbooks, as you know, with Bedford St. Martin's. And then I have a number of academic press books. And they are marketed differently. They make different kinds of money. The publishers do different things. Obviously, I don't really expect to make any money off of academic press books, and I'm thrilled for them to be accessible. In fact, many of us have worked for many years to try to make our work as free and accessible as we can to everyone. Now the problem is, if we make our work free and accessible to everyone, these AI companies will take it, say that it's fair use, and then they'll make billions of dollars off it. And so that's really not what we had in mind when we started trying to figure out how to make our work free and accessible to everyone. So then you have companies like Wiley, HarperCollins, who are saying, like, let's make deals with them, and then we can give the authors some of the royalties on that. I don't love that either, because I'd really rather that my work not be used to train AI, because you can't really put that genie back in the bottle. But on the other hand, if they're going to steal it anyway, is this a better option? I don't really know. I hope that people like Rachel can come up with a better solution to that. But then your other question, I guess, Lucy, was about the long-term consequences of this. It really is sort of scary to me because, you know, those of us who are academics do have to write to keep our jobs. It's really important for us to be doing that. And we don't typically make a lot of money for what we write. And to know that our work is being taken by these really profitable for-profit companies without compensating us is a real challenge, because our ideas will be in the world. People will be getting information that we've generated without any recognition of where those ideas came from. And so it does make me wonder what the long-term, what the long game is.
Well, thank you so much. We'll have to leave it there. I've been talking with Rachel Geeman, co-lead counsel for plaintiffs in the Anthropic settlement, and Elizabeth Wardle, director of Miami University's Roger and Joyce House Center for Writing Excellence. Thank you both so much for your time today. Up next, Honky Tonkin' with Bobby Mackey and the Southgate House Revival. This is Cincinnati Edition.